On this episode of The Flatish Show, number 46, a Brenda Starr update, JW responds to episode 43, Joe G comes through with a segment on Quakerism, and I talk about Brokeback Mountain. This and more. The Flatish Show, starring Kenty and Jose. Welcome to the Flatish Show. Tab for my diet. Well, it is Mother's Day. So, happy birthday to all the mothers who listen to the show. I'm Kenty. Jose is taking a nap. It's Cape Ann, and it's been raining for the last 7 days. And I don't know if roads are going to be washed out or not, but it's very deep in some parts. Johnny and I were out. We had to get in a canoe at part of our trip, or it seemed like it at least. And so, that's that. Let's see. This is the Flatish Show. You can reach me at kenty@theflatishshow.com or call me at 206-339-JOSE. So, I wanted to say something, too, before we start the show, is... My wind has been taken from my sails over the past few weeks, and it's ever since that Madge Curry thing about faggot. Okay, there's something actually more important than faggot I wanted to say, which I keep on forgetting, but I am raising money for the Easter Seals Walk, which is in Boston on June 4th. There's a link in my show notes to a page I created at Easter Seals where you can make your donation using your credit card. My goal is $150, so if you can donate $5, $10, that'd be great. It would help me towards my goal. So whoever's listening to this, I'm not asking for the money for myself. I want you to donate it to Easter Seals. You can get to that link from my show notes. And if you come to www.theflatishshow.com, you'll see a recorder on the side. I think it's the fourth hole. It will say podcast. So you'll click on that, go to my podcast. It's a blog. And then you'll see the show notes. And look for the latest episode, 46, called Roses Are Red. Go down, look for the Easter Seals, click on it, and please donate. Because I'm having the walk, going to do the walk. And we're going to help that kid. There's a kid I met. His name is Drew. Very sweet kid. He has a feeding tube. He has more gumption in life than, you know, I have. I have no reason to complain about anything. So there. So Easter Seals. Donate, please. Come to my show notes and donate. Thank you. You know, I revealed on my show about my dark secret, which, you know, in 43 was I stuck a rifle in my mouth. I don't know if it was loaded, but I certainly was depressed and felt like killing myself at that time. And, you know, I've always known, it's always been there, but talking about it and thinking about it and revealing it has really made me kind of feel vulnerable, to say the least. And this whole thing about using faggot has not ended for me. You know, it has brought back a lot of memories from that time, which makes me think that, you know, scars, some things never heal. They're always there. Do I talk about the ego and id later? And anyway, I think I talk about it later in the show, but, you know, it's like the I don't know. I don't know what to say. It's the wind has been taken from my sails, and it's been really difficult to motivate myself to do this show because it's like I'm exhausted. I'm really emotionally exhausted from that experience. And having done something and making myself vulnerable, and I'm so glad I got, you know, the feedback, and I'm glad I did it. And I hope that you realize that I, you know, did that show to to tell the story, tell my story. So maybe somebody else will not do that, because it's not, there is life after being called a faggot, you know. So if, I guess if any kids are listening or anybody is, you know, has been hurt by that word, you know, I just want to tell you, hang in there. Hang in there and keep your eyes open and you'll be fine. The world is a big place and there's more than these bullies out there. And that's all I can give you is that encouragement. But the pain never goes away. You only learn how to deal with it. So with that said, I just had to say that because it's been bothering me. And to tell you the truth, I'm being honest with you. I mean, it's really taken the wind out of my sails. And the response from these people like Adam Curry and Madge Weinstein is, you know, I think it's sort of blasé, you know. Life goes on, you know. I think it was a cruel publicity stunt. And, you know, that's my take on it. It was just a publicity stunt. And it blew up in their face and... So we'll go on, you know. You know, you shouldn't play with people's, you know, you don't know what you're saying. So anyway, so right now I'm going to play the new promo from the Pulling My Pod podcast, and here that is.
Buy me some crackers and Apple Jacks.
Yes, fans. You can also hear the monk sing if you come listen to us at pullingmypod.com.
We were recording that?
Yes. Oh. We are trying out a new format. We're going live just like this promo. You'll hear things such as monk flipping pages.
Monk flipping pages. Can you hear that?
Monk spitting into a bottle. You can hear that sometimes. Monk touching himself. Okay, don't do that.
You can hear that all the time.
Sometimes monk touches me. That's just gross. You know why he touches me?
I'm the boss.
Damn Skippy, you bastards. But yeah, come check us out, pullingmypod.com. We're trying something new. We hope you like it.
That's what I do. I annoy people.
You just scream into the microphone?
Well, no, just anything annoying.
Okay.
It doesn't have to be that specifically.
But, you know, right. Well, we'll send this out and get it played on a couple different shows.
I'm down with that.
Yeah. You know, maybe the losers like two guys, one brain will send it to us or play it for us. Yeah. I don't know.
We're not going to have any friends left.
Today's show is a little bit of this and a little bit of that. There's a Brenda Starr update. We have a call, a response from JW regarding the show 43, I think it is, a couple weeks ago. And Beppe, Joe G from Beppe Podcast, has come through with a segment on Quakerism. Now, he sent a 12-minute long segment, which he actually has on his own show called What is Quakerism, I believe. I'm going to play the first 4 minutes of it or so. Okay, and we'll tell you basics of Quakerism, and if you're interested, then I'm going to ask you to subscribe to Joe G's podcast called the Beppe Podcast. Likewise, JW is from Mandrake Society Radio, and I urge my listeners to try out his show as well. Both are excellent. I also have going to talk about Brokeback Mountain and how it is an anti-gay movie. And I think that's about all. But I want to thank all my listeners for listening. I know it's to take the time out of your day to listen to it. I appreciate it. I know it means a lot to me. I don't know if anybody has signed my Frapper map because I haven't looked. But if you have, welcome to the Flatus Show. And congratulations to Kara. Listener Kara on her graduation from... nursing school. She's a nurse practitioner. So, with that said, on with the show. Okay. Wanting to talk about Brokeback Mountain again. Many people think that Brokeback Mountain is this pro-gay, whatever that means, movie. because it showed two men, you know, kissing and fucking or whatever, and which happened very quickly. What disturbs me about Brokeback Mountain, which I think is not a gay-friendly movie, or it's not even a pro-gay movie, whatever that means, is right after the two men decide that they love each other and want to physically consummate their relationship, they're having fun and, you know, having little lovers things. And the one guy, he was supposed to have been out in the meadow or wherever, some mountain, looking at the sheep. And so to protect them from wolves and coyotes or whatever. So it's next morning, he goes, and the first image you see after this night of lovemaking, which is, you know, happens like in about 3 seconds, is a dead sheep. A sheep which is, it's, you know, gut ripped open. So, cinematically, that is what gay sex is being associated with in this movie. And even later on, you get the sense that Jack, the one of the characters who lived in Texas, he dies, and in the movie, you get the sense that he was murdered. Because Ennis, when he was a child, there was apparently some gay people, and his old gay people, and one was lynched, and his penis is pulled off, and Ennis's father took him and his brother to see this dead body, saying, "This is what happens to fags," basically. And Ennis had this image in his mind, and when he heard that Jack died, he had this image that, you know, he was actually murdered, you know. Which is, I don't know what the story says in the book, but it was very clear in the movie. Let's remember is that regardless of what the book says, it's the movie. It's the images that show up, you know, one after the other. And so, ultimately, I think Brokeback Mountain is very anti-gay. It associates any kind of gay sex, even though it was wonderful in this loving relationship, it's automatically related to irresponsibility, a death of a sheep, and all sorts of things happen in the movie to, you know, court to show this. At the end, you know, all that Ennis has is this shirt to smell. And shirts, where do you put a shirt? In a closet. So this movie is just telling you to stay in your closet. It's also the two characters in the movie. Ennis is not very out, I would say. You know, his only lover is Jack. Jack, on the other hand, the one who dies, explores his sexuality more by going to, where does he go? No. He's rich enough because he belongs to this rich family. He doesn't go to New York or San Francisco. No, he goes to a little town across the border in Mexico and picks up, you know, Mexican guys. And apparently he also, you know, cruises the other cowboys in his area in Texas, which is crazy. I mean, because this movie started in the 1960s and ended in, I don't know, 20 years later in the 80s. Those characters would have known about gay life and everything. I mean, it's, you know, it's a movie out of a vacuum. It's like a parable. So what made me really think about this was something I actually heard on one of these religious podcasts I listened to. They talked about Ezekiel, and I thought that is what Ong was trying to do. This is code, probably. Ong is probably a Christian, or the writers are, and they're trying to have a code. So that's why there wasn't really that big of a stink about Brokeback Mountain amongst these, you know, fundamentalist Christians, because the movie is an anti-gay movie. Now there's it all stems around this, you know, shepherding and the sheep that died. Okay, they are shepherds, and here's the Ezekiel. It's in Ezekiel chapter 34, verse 7. Through, I'll say. Therefore, ye shepherds, hear the word of Jehovah. As I live, saith the Lord Jehovah, surely for as much as my sheep become a prey, and my sheep become food to all the beasts of the field, because there was no shepherd, neither did my shepherds search for my sheep, but the shepherds fed themselves, and fed not my sheep. Therefore, ye shepherds, hear the word of Jehovah. So, yeah, they fed themselves, each other's cocks, and that caused this irresponsibility for the sheep to die. So it just makes me really angry. You know, people look at it superficially, but you have, you know, in this country, there is a group of, and this is what I wanted to get about Christianity. Christianity is actually a religion that has very many, in its beginnings, had a lot of, a relationship or similar to these mystery religions, where there's a secret society, you have to go through these things to whatever, for enlightenment. And, you know, to a certain extent, the Catholic Church is very secretive, I mean, and certainly these fundamentalist Christians are very secretive, and they talk in code. It's all over the internet how Bush talks to his constituents or this core, these core people in code. In all his speeches, he says things which are biblical. And of course, it goes over the head of, you know, the other Americans, because they don't think it's important, you know, whether it should be important to read the Bible or not. But I'm telling you, I don't care whether you believe in the Bible, and I'm not saying there's any kind of savior or whatever. But the Bible is an important piece of literature, and I would say that if you really want to know what's going on in this country, read the Bible as an evangelical does, and you can hear what these people are saying to each other. You know? And I'm not saying there's any kind of, and this is not to sound paranoid either, but Bush does do this, and it's been talked about, you know? So I don't know. So anyway, I think basically Christianity is a very secretive thing has been. So that leads me to the evangelicals. Okay. I've been listening to these evangelicals on the podcast, and there are two types of evangelicals that I have come across. One is an evangelical who says that an individual only has to accept Christ to save his soul, meaning that the individual can save himself, and if he doesn't, it's his fault. The other evangelical, and this is a real eye-opener, is more like a Calvinist, where he believes that one is chosen by God. You can't save yourself. It's the grace of God that saves you. You can't do anything. You can't save yourself. And that doesn't mean you allows you to be bad or whatever. But you have no you really have no control over what God's going to do for you or how he's going to use you in the world. Now, I think Muslims also have a similar thing, a belief like that, but I'm not sure because I'm not Muslim, and I'm only going on bits and pieces that I've read here and there. But it's interesting. So, oh yeah, another thing is that these evangelicals, some of them look at it literally, meaning it's physically literal, okay? And there's other ones who believe that it's literal, but it's literal in a spiritual level. So that you have to sort of you have to be able to read the Bible and understand what the words mean. So when they're talking about, I'm trying to think of an example, like when they mention certain things, they're not really referring to that really, but they're referring to it like any kind of, I'm trying to think, like the crown. Let's say they talk about a crown, the king's crown. They're not talking about the king's crown. They're talking about the power that the king has or any kind of leader. So that's interesting. Thirdly, there's a webpage about masturbation. Up to the 1950s, doctors, even there's Boston doctors who created these devices that boys should wear so they didn't touch themselves or masturbate. Up to the 1950s. It's this focus on masturbation, spilling of the seed, homosexuality. It's like this waste of seed that is such a precious thing. Now, they said in the, you know, and I said this before, okay, in the past, you know, if you, it's a much smaller, you know, life was different, okay? I don't know what the mortality rates were. I guess they were higher. That's why I understand them to be, right? So it's important that if you have a tribe of people, right, that you want to have as many people as possible to do your conquering and cooking and cleaning and, you know, do the stuff that needs to be done to keep the tribe alive, right? So that means no masturbation and, you know, make sure that you're having sex with women, right? So, but today, with this it doesn't work today. Today, the population is, you know, astronomical. It's not, it's a different world. And people just can't get that out of their head, you know? So, as, you know, and this is really kind of, this is, I want to say something that's really kind of, you know, scary in a way, is the Ratzinger said something, well, if we're going to lose members because of strict codes or whatever, it's okay, because a smaller church will be better because we'll be more faithful. And I heard something similar about the evangelicals. So I'm thinking, like, okay, they're going to kill us off, the people who don't believe, so they can have their small tribe. And of course, at that point, you know, everybody will have to fuck to have babies because the population will be down. So, I don't know. This is my paranoid. So anyway, that's what I wanted to say. That's Brenda Starry here, finishing up her scoop just for you. So last time we left off... Oh, Christ. Christ, Begora. Okay, here. Last time we left off in Brenda Starr, she was at the Celebrity Chef's Ball, and Rock was looking for Brenda because she was snooping around a fantuna tied up in Rock's trailer cooking. So he grabs her and says, I have a knife in my pocket, and I can fillet you faster than a sushi chef. So he dances with her, and... Brenda tells Rock that she knows everything about what's going on, that tuna is tied up, that he doesn't cook. And he takes her to, drags her to the trailer. And then she says, confess, Rock. And he says, I'll confess that, you know, that stew that you ate earlier that you love so much? It was made from chihuahua. So he actually cooked a chihuahua. And she has this gross look on her face, which is kind of gross. So anyway... So he continues to take her to the trailer and where tuna is kept, and then he ties her up and tuna up with poultry twine, and puts an apple in their mouths. At this point, Gabby is jealous because he was dancing with Rock, and of course Gabby loves Rock. She comes banging on the door, get out of here, what are you doing, you're having a tryst with that bitch. So you shouldn't say bitch, but that redheaded tramp, she's beef jerky to my tenderloin. And so he says, don't worry, Gabby. He opens the door, you know. So she bursts in, and she's like, oh, a menage a trois? And he goes, no, honey. And so he ties her up. So the three of them are tied up with apples in their mouths. So then he starts pouring extra virgin olive oil as, what's her name? Rachel Ray, EEVO. So he's pouring EEVO. Around the trailer, around them, and he's going to light it. So he has a match, and he drops it to the floor and leaves. Before he drops the map, he starts confessing his crimes, and he's right in front of Brenda. This is very good. And Brenda has the apple in her mouth, and she spits it at his crotch, and he's like, oh! All right, so she starts screaming for help. He picks up the apple and says, you know, well, you know what started the original sin is this apple, and no one's going to hear you because the Celebrity Chef Ball music is playing and everything. So he sticks the apple back in her mouth, lights the olive oil, flames start going out, and he leaves. So he goes back to the Celebrity Chef Ball, and Paris Hilton is there, or somebody like Paris Hilton. She's like, I smell smoke. And then the girl says, of course you smell smoke. It's a party. So at this point, Tuna's nephew, Paco or whatever his name is, he comes in with Patch, Brenda's dog. He has a patch over his eye, the dog, and a horde of chihuahuas. Because, you know, before he left Brenda's apartment and found the chihuahua place. So he brought the chihuahuas with him. and he sees Gordo, which is Rock, and he goes, "Well, Gordo, where is Brenda Starr?" And he goes, "I'll take you to her," you know. So he, so he's, before he's, before this happens, he says to Patch, "You're my guardian now." And Patch goes, "Arf!" So, so Rock starts taking the kid to the trailer to be burned up, and the Patch comes and attacks Gordo, which is Rock, and then all the Chihuahuas come and attack, and they're all over the place, a million Chihuahuas, and they're yipping and yipping you know, going after Rock. So at this point, Brenda Starr, she's, you know, she's like, "Why can't I break this poultry twine? I can do it all the time at home." So she finally breaks it, drags out Tuna and Gabby by their feet, and comes into the celebrity ball. And everybody's like, "Is that Brenda Starr, the famous reporter?" And Rock is like, "No, no, not Brenda Starr." And so it's on the news, and her editor, Hank, and Mr. Bottomline, the owner of the paper, see this, and they're like, "Oh, my God, what's going on?" And they find out Rock has done all this bad stuff. So Mr. Bottomline's, "I have another idea to have, you know, increase our circulation." And the Hank is like, "Oh, yeah, right. I think I'm ready to retire from this job." And he says, "You can't, because the retirement fund is has gone belly up." And how plithy and common, you know, what's the right word? Yeah, of today, it is. So anyway, so Gabby wakes up and she says, oh Rock," and so starts attacking him. Of course, you know, she's scorned. But in the end, she's happy because her book sales are going to increase. She's going to make a lot of money, and you know, so that's that. That's Brenda Starr up to this point. So what will her next adventure be? This is very exciting. So you should watch Brenda Starr. Look for it in your paper. Look for it. Jean, Jean, roses are red. All the leaves have gone green. And the clouds are so low, you can touch them, and so come out to your meadow, Jean. Jean, Jean, you're young and alive. Come out of your half-dreamed dream and run, if you will, to the top of the hill. Open your arms, Bunny Jean, till the sheep in the valley come home my way. Till the stars fall around me and find me alone. When the sun comes a-singing, I'll still be waiting, Jean. Jean, the roses are red, all the leaves have gone green, and the hills are ablaze with the moon's yellow haze. Come into my arms, Bonnie Jean, till the sheep in the valley come home my way. Till the stars fall around me and find me alone. When the sun comes a-singing, I'll still be waiting. Jean, Jean, the roses are red, all the leaves have gone green, and the hills are ablaze with the moon's yellow haze. Come into my arms, Bonnie Jean." And now a voice message from JW from Mandrake Society Radio in response to episode 43.
Kenzie, this is JW. How are you doing? Appreciated your email on my show recently, but I'm really calling you to talk about episode 43. I've been really kind of out of the loop with all my shows. I'm really kind of catching up this Saturday evening. And listening to episode 43, Gnosticism Part 2, as well as Your Secret, Thank you for sharing that. I know, even as myself, I've considered, had thoughts of suicide. Never really put myself in any particular place of danger as far as a gun, but I think I had, and still in some ways deal with, something that's probably closer to a lot of people, which is either abusing food. You know, if you eat a lot and you use that as sort of a way to salve the hurts, it makes about as much sense as, you know, someone calling you a name and you saying that, you know, I'm so mad at you, I'm going to go and eat a half-gallon thing of ice cream, and you're like wondering, okay, how did this hurt the other person? But anyway, that I think is something that I definitely was dealing with at the time, would just bury myself in food and just eat a lot. And sometimes when I do that now, it's really not for the same reason, but it's, that's kind of what I did it for then. So I really appreciate you sharing that. And as far as the argument towards the end is you know, people being tolerant and standing up for their rights, I do believe that people do need to stand up for what they personally believe. There also needs to be a place for dialogue and a real discussion. That's really what's lacking with what's going on now, because people want to make things so polarized that it's almost sort of a divide and conquer type thing. If I can get everybody in their own little corners and preach, and then you just release the mad army onto the streets and no one's ever listening to anyone, everyone's just mad, everyone's just angry, everyone's playing the I've been abused role, I've been downtrodden, I've been, you know, even if in some cases some people truly have been, in many cases everybody has been. I mean, you kind of listen to my poem, or listen to the poem that I played at the last show with Dashade, that everybody's hands have been on the trigger, so to speak. Everyone has suffered. And so that, with that said, there needs to be real dialogue for people to kind of come to an understanding, even if it's just an understanding of, okay, this is really where you are. It's not where I am, but it's where you are. And that is really where, like for myself, even with my blog, I, for a while, had to stop blogging for a little bit just because I really wanted to create more dialogue and not use my blog as some pulpit of choice just to preach my thing, but never really listen to anyone else. I think that's why I like interviewing. I like doing that. But that's really where I had to come from, especially my written blog, not Mandrake Society Radio, but my Mandrake Society. So overall, again, a very good show. I've missed your shows, and I've missed listening to your show and Bepi Podcast, and just catching up with Mikey Pods as well, and I'll be getting the newest issues of Neo's Night. So thank you again for your show. Listening to it tonight just reminded me again why I continue to listen. And I look forward to listening to Anarchism. I'm about to throw that in right now, episode 44. But thank you again for bringing your show on, and I look forward to more. Thank you. Bye now.
Thank you, JW. That was JW from Mandrake Society Radio, and that was his response to episode 43. And he brings up a few things in there, one of which is a food, when somebody feels bad, some people when they feel bad eat. Now, when I feel bad, I don't necessarily eat, but I like to buy books or CDs. I don't know. It's comforting, you know, when I feel like, if I'm going to have been hurt or feel threatened, I have to, I don't have to, but shopping in a bookstore, looking at books, even just being in the bookstore or record store, looking at the different things makes me feel better. Gives me my adds to my ego, which brings me to one couple things, responses to your response, JW. I think it was sixth grade. We had one day we were learning about the ego, and what we did is we had this circle. We had a circle of construction paper, and we wrote our name on it. And so the teacher said, put it on the wall, which we did. And she goes, okay, this is your ego. Now, what happens is when if you feel bad, it's like taking a little part of your ego away. So you want to, if you something happens that you feel bad, rip off a portion of your ego. But, you know, save that part, you know. And, you know, that will represent that, you know, you're feeling bad. Something has taken something away from your ego, yourself, your identity. And if you feel something great has happened, you know, then add to it, you know, tape ego, you know, more stuff to it. So it was very interesting. By the end of the day, I think I was left with, like, you know, a little piece of paper. I kept on going back and forth, ripping off pieces, adding things. And, you know, I look back, I was a very sensitive child. I mean, when I was very young, I mean, I'd cry at the drop of a dime. And my thing was to run into the bathroom and close the door and just cry. And I'd come out and, you know, feel better. But I was very sensitive. And I'm not as sensitive, but I still am, you know. I don't cry at the drop of a dime, but I guess I'm, I don't know what it is. But as a child, I was very emotional. I'm a little more toughened up as at 41, let's hope, right? But still those feelings of you know, the ego being ripped apart applies to an adult or anybody. But I think it was very wise of my teacher to do that, because it really taught us about ourselves that, you know, we can add back to that our sense of self with something. Of course, my something, when I want to add back to my ego, is to go look at records or buy a record or a book or something like that, because I get the sense that I'm doing something, you know, I don't know, makes me a better person, I guess, which is a stupid thing. But what I have done, instead of spending money on these things, I do spend money on them, but I find used bookstores where they have like dollar books or 50-cent books, and I can always find something, you know, that will make me feel like it's worth the purchase. So, and adds to my ego. So thank you, JW, because that, you know, your message reminded me of that. Now, as for tolerance, I agree with you that there needs to be a dialogue. If only all people saw that we needed a dialogue, that would be, you know, a great thing. But there's always going to be a group of people, and especially like these fundamentalist Christians, which they have a sense they're right, and that's that. And they don't want to come to the table. There's no dialogue, and they don't care. And what concerns me is this cobble of Christians, you know, changing the government for the worse. I mean, look at George Bush, what he has done with putting Roberts in and Scalito, which is even worse. I mean, Roberts, he's apparently a very good lawyer and everything. But don't you think that's judicial activism by putting those people in? Do you really think that they have a fair and balanced view of everything? Especially Scalito. The things I've heard about that, you know, asshole. You know, Roberts, there's no history in Roberts, really, you know. He's a wild card. Who knows where he's going to go? But whatever happened, you know, politics has to be taken out of the law. And it seems to me that Scalito and maybe, and I don't know about Roberts, but they have an agenda. They look at what they do is they have already decided what the Constitution is. So, yeah. But George Bush can say, oh, yeah, they're going to make their judgments based on the Constitution. Yeah. On their view, on their interpretation of the Constitution, you know, the Constitution is one of the great things about the Constitution is that it is a organic thing; it can grow. And I believe that they're going to try to make it into some sort of crystalline structure with one interpretation and to the benefit of whoever, you know? You know, who knows what's going on with the world? I mean, I've talked about this before, and it's depressing, but like with the environment, the way it's changing, and who knows what's real anymore? Or what is a real threat, I should say. Of course we know what is real. Or should know what's real. But anyway, JW, thank you so much for your response. It means a lot. And for my listeners, go to mandrakesocietyradio.com for a great, great show. And his one-year anniversary is coming up. So happy one-year anniversary, JW.
So, the question is, what is Quakerism? My initial response to you, Ken, and to the question, is to quote the famous Desi Arnaz cry, ay-yay-yay-yay-yay-yay-yay-yay. The question seems simple, right, and Quakers seem like simple folks, right? But unfortunately, it's not quite that simple for the simple folk. So, let me start with this. All forms of Quakerism, and there are many forms, from those who have pastors and have a strong evangelical Christian theology, to those who are very liberal both in their theologies and politics, claim as their foundation a radically Protestant-like religious movement that started in the mid-1600s in England. At the time, the country was in the midst of great political and religious changes. More and more popular and grassroots groups were challenging the state church, in this case that's the Anglican Church, and the monarchy. Out of this turmoil came a young man named George Fox. He grew up in the country and was not well educated. He was restless and was seeking how to know God more truly. He rejected the various Christian traditions of that time and wound up learning from a group of people who called themselves the Seekers. They sat in quiet reverence to hear from God directly. Although George Fox eventually left this group, the process inspired him. Then he had a sort of revelation about Christ and the church. He came to several conclusions about Jesus and what the true, quote-unquote, church should be. These conclusions were basically, 1. Jesus Christ was available directly through the Holy Spirit to teach his followers himself, without the need of ministers, pastors, priests, rituals, or sermons. One of the most famous statements made by Fox regarding this, and that is still quoted today, is, quote, "There is one, even Jesus Christ, that can speak to thy condition," end quote. 2. Every person was imbued from birth with the light of Christ. What was needed was for people to discover that they had a part of God in them already. It was believed that rituals, the sacraments, paid ministers, and spoken, recited creeds distracted people from this inner light. This is reflected in another famous phrase that came from the mother of Quakerism, Margaret Fell, who stated, quote, "You will say Christ saith this, and the apostles say that. But what canst thou say? Art thou a child of light, and hast thou walked in the light? And what thou speakest, is it inwardly from God?" End quote. 3. Because all people have this inner light of Christ, then all people can be ministers of God. Likewise, all people are of equal worth because God blessed them with the same light. And 4. The use of silence was to help people to settle and locate the inner light within, and then have contact with God directly to find comfort, conviction, and guidance. Despite these openings, as Fox put them, this did not mean that there were no beliefs or ministers amongst early Quakers. This is a common misunderstanding even amongst many friends today. What it did mean was that they believed that they would all come to the same truth, given that they all had the same light within them to guide them to that truth. Hence, there was no need to write down these truths as creeds for people to mindlessly recite. What was most important was that these creeds were written on the heart so that it affected both thought and deed. Friends also believed that each member had gifts to offer the greater community. Some of these were given the gift of shepherding and guiding others in the ways of the light. These were the ministers and elders of the community. They were not paid, so that there wasn't, as we might put it today, a conflict of interest between getting paid and offering what early friends called, quote, a free gospel ministry, end quote. And when they said free, they meant literally free.
Okay, Joji, thank you so much for the information on Quakers. And my original plan was to talk about, after this section, about Quaker Oats. Now, because I thought Quaker Oats, you know, were was a company founded by Quakers. One would assume that, right? And the person on the oatmeal box looks like William Penn, right? Yep, very good. Everybody thinks that, right? Maybe not everybody, but I did. And I looked in Wikipedia. I was doing a search for the Quaker Oats Company, a search, and it came up with some interesting information, which I'm going to tell you. Now, the reason why I just assumed Quaker – actually, let me go back. I was thinking that the Quakers created Quaker Oats because I had discovered that Seventh-day Adventist Kellogg, who's a Seventh-day Adventist, he created cornflakes, and I thought – that'd be an interesting topic, like, you know, these sort of not mainstream religious movements creating breakfast cereals. However, enough about Kellogg, okay, and his cornflakes, which were apparently created to help boys stop masturbating, which it did not, you know, we know that's not true. Or, you know, who knows? So, okay, about the Quakers. Okay, I am so, this is scandalous. It says here, the Quakers, first of all, Quaker Oats has no connection to the Religious Society of Friends at all. And the reason why a Quaker was chosen, why the name was chosen, because Quakers have a reputation for honesty in their dealings. But the people who created the oatmeal were not Quakers themselves, so i.e. not maybe honest in their dealings, as we'll find out later on. Now, this is from like 1856, so, you know, they 1901, I think the company became – 1901 is when the company became Quaker Oats Company. And let's see here. And the dress of the Quaker on the box, that is apparently that dress has been abandoned by the religious movement for – quite some time, so says Wikipedia. But Joe G, do you dress like the Quaker in the Quaker Oats box? I know you do. You can't lie. I would dress like that if I had it. But I think that's just colonial dressing. I don't think that's a typical Quaker dress, is there? Was there a particular dress that Quakers wore? Like, you know, a particular clothing? Anyway, Quakers don't like this because it's dishonest that they're using the Quaker, you know, the Quaker name for their oatmeal. And they said it also causes public confusion because many people think Quakers are like Amish people. Now, I sang Simple Gifts, which is a Shaker hymn tune. So I don't know any Quaker hymn tunes. And I like Simple Gifts, so, oh well, that's the reason why. So not to have any misconceptions about Shakers, Quakers, and Amish, okay? So there's a big controversy with, now this is their honesty portion. How honest are they? In 1950s, I'll read it, researchers from Quaker Oats Company, MIT, and Harvard University carried out experiments to determine how the nutrients from cereals traveled through the body. Parents of mentally retarded children were asked for permission to let their children be members of a science club at their school. Being a member of the science club gave the children special privileges. The parents were told that the children would be fed with a diet high in nutrients. They were not, however, told, and the consent form contained no information indicating that the food their children were fed was laced with radioactive calcium and iron. The information obtained from the experiment was to be used as part of an advertising campaign. The company was later sued because of the experiments. The lawsuit was settled on December 31st of 1997. So beware when you are asked to be part of a science club in your elementary school. This is for all parents. So if your children or if you're asked that your child participate in a science club, hey Johnny, you need this? Then you give me a good. That's right, I'm glowing. That's terrible. I shouldn't make fun of it, but that's terrible. Who wants to eat oatmeal now? Doesn't sound wholesome, does it? They were in Quaker Oats merged with PepsiCo in 2001. In the 70s, the company financed the making of the film Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory and allowed the company to use a number of product names mentioned in the movie for candy bars. Talk about advertising in films. And the guy on the box of Quaker Oats is not William Penn. That was an image painted by Hayden Sundblom in 1957. So there you go. There's all these. They also have all these other like breakfast cereals: Captain Crunch, Life cereal, Quisp. That's the little alien guy with the Aunt Jemima is part of the Quaker Oat family. Oh, Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat. It's too scandalous.
You've been listening to The Flavor Show. You can reach me at 206-339-JOSE, or you can reach me at Kenty@theflavorshow.com. Thank you for listening.